You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful podcast. And on today's show, we will continue our player season reviews. Seems kind of crazy because we're about to start a new season in, looks like, 2 months now. No, not even 2 months. Probably looking like 6 to 8 weeks. Looks like December 22nd start date is to go right now. So we're trying to burn through these player season reviews so we can get to a preview of all the season, right? We're going to have such a short time between the draft, free agency, and then the offseason before we have games again. So going to be a lot of podcasts to do the next few days. But on today's show, I'm going to do Jakarr Sampson season review. I think the 6'7 power forward slash center had a great year for the Pacers. By his standards, at least, obviously, he's not some world-beating player, but he definitely proved himself, I guess, as a valuable, you know, 11th, 12th guy on a roster. So I'm going to break down kind of what I liked him this year, where he goes from here, some lingering questions. And then on the other side, end the show, just as kind of a tease for the last segment of the show, I will talk some Drew Holiday trades, maybe just one, to be honest. Obviously, there was, I believe, a Shams tweet that said the Pelicans are actively shopping Drew Holiday. He has been a favorite of mine and Tony's for a while. We've talked about him numerous times in possible trades. Don't know if a trade will happen. It's probably unlikely, but I thought we would get in on a little bit of the content game and just give you a hypothetical trade or two and just my thoughts on what it would take to get him in general, because I don't think he's going to be as cheap as some Pacer fans would like, but also think there's some risk in going after him for what could be just a one-year rental. So, anyways, so Jakarr Sampson had a pretty solid year for the Pacers. He played in 34 games, starting 12 of them and averaging about 14 minutes per game. In those games he played, he averaged 4.6 points, 2.6 rebounds, and he shot 59% on about 3.4 attempts per game. Jakarr got a lot of run in the bubble and in the playoffs. Not really in the playoffs so much, but in the bubble, where he ended up, I believe, was kind of the Pacers' sort of center, I would say, backup center behind Turner. Obviously, backup center, really, behind Turner for all 8 of those bubble games. And then he played 16 minutes in the first playoff game, 17, 9, and 6. So just really good amount of minutes for a guy who, for good parts of the year, just didn't play, was either inactive, was a DNP coach's decision, because he just wasn't really playing in the rotation, right? He kind of would show up in these spurts when a guy got hurt. So, like, I think Turner got hurt in that Brooklyn game in early October, and he showed up and he played the next, I believe, 10 games and had a pretty solid run. I mean, he had that one nice game against Washington where he had 14 points, and then he did not play for a while again, and then popped up again against Milwaukee. I believe a game of Sabonis missed, and then again another set of games with Turner missed, and so on. So kind of constantly going and starting was obviously kind of their, what we want to call it, backup 4-5 combination, depending on where Goga was at any given moment. Goga didn't play a ton last year because of injury issues and obviously being a rookie and whatnot, but overall, if I had a grade Sampson, I would put him, what's fair to say, I think he had, for by his standards, he had an A-plus season, right? By, you know, NBA standards, he was a C, an average player, right? Even below average, really. But by his standards, he was just trying to, you know, keep himself in the league, right? So in the preseason, he played just 4 games for the Bulls. I believe he played in the G League a little bit. In those 4 games, he had great stats. I mean, he played like 31 minutes, averaging 20 points. Obviously, they're just 4 games with the both wasn't playing defense. But like in previous years, right? So when he was in Philly, he played about, you know, he played 74 games, and he played 73 in a year where he split between Philly and Denver. Then 22 with Sacramento, 4 Chicago, and then 34 in Indiana, right? So he had been in the league, but he had sort of been fading out of it, right? I think, you know, until he kind of had that little run with Chicago after his G League season ended, he probably was looking at, you know, a career overseas or whatnot. But I think what he did with the Pacers last year is he showed, yeah, he's not going to be in rotation. And maybe if he's your 10th guy, maybe you could play him. I mean, I think it kind of depends. I mean, I think he has some ability, I think, to be an outside shooter if you gave him the opportunity. I think the Pacers, you know, as always, are the kind of team that just doesn't let their guys shoot, especially their bigger guys. Like, I think he's not a great jump shooter, but he did show some signs of being able to shoot a little bit with the Bulls. And I wonder, you know, if you put him on a team that said, sit in the corner and you're going to shoot some threes, and could he make enough of them at a, you know, maybe taking 2 a game, could he make them at a, you know, 0.7 clip, right? So that's about 35% from the field. And that might be worth it for a team like, you know, a Rockets or a Bucks, for example, who just need some, you know, bodies. But you know, he proved to me that he maybe isn't a top 10 player on any team, but he's certainly worth an 11th, 12th roster spot, because when he comes in, he brings some energy. He's not a bad defender in terms of, like, you know, what you could find in that 11th, 12th guy, right? I mean, he's not in the top, you know, probably 300 NBA players, but he's in that 300 to 400 range, and he's probably in the upper echelon of that 300 to 400 range, right? There are 450 players in the league, right? So he's probably somewhere in, like, the low 300s, which means he'll have a place in this league for at least a little while, right? I mean, obviously, he turns 27 this year, so... he's kind of hitting that prime athleticism. He might not, you know, once he ends that kind of run, he might be out of the league. But I think he definitely showed to the league this year, like, I'm your 12th guy. I can be productive when you play me a little bit. I'm not going to, you know, be world beating, but I'm good enough if you just need a stable guy off the bench and you need some, I almost call it like veteran, right? You know, he's not, you know, he hasn't played that many years. He's not even that old, but he's just somebody who has played some minutes and can just be, you know, can kind of do that thing, right? You don't, you know, a lot of times in the NBA, there's a lot of players that you just don't know if they can really even play, you know, let's say 14 minutes a game when they play, right? Are they good enough to even put up quality minutes there? Are they too, some are too old, some are too inexperienced? He's kind of proved that he is that kind of player. And from his standard, that's good enough, right? He made $1.7 million last year. And my guess is that's what he will make. Well, I guess whatever the minimum is, right? The minimum in the league is based on years played and whatnot. So it probably will increase it. I think this year, I guess, the cap stuff we really don't know anything about, so I'm probably speaking too much before I know actually what's happening. But, you know, he'll make a minimum level salary. I think the Pacers could bring him back. I think they make a lot of sense. He was, you know, he knows the roster. He knows the, you know, they're going to bring back most of the same players and make a switch here or there, but he's, you know, they know the guys. He makes a decent third-ish center. And if they have the roster spot, it might be worth it. You know, I don't know. With him, you just don't really know with players like that level, because they bring a new coach. He might think he wants somebody else, right? He hasn't, you know, I think Jakar could provide some 3-point shooting if you let him, but he didn't like prove anything last year. Like, he's going to be a 3-point, you know, decent 3-point shooter. Not even decent. I mean, we're talking like a guy can make 30% of his threes on, you know, when he gets one a game when he plays. He didn't even take that. He took, you know, I think he took all of like totals real quick. I think last year he took a total of 13 threes. So, and that goes back really in his career. I mean, his first season when he played with Philly, he was took, you know, 127. Now he shot really well at Chicago from three, but he only took 14 in all four games. But like, there's a chance, right? Could that be more like he should be taking, you know, when he's in one or two threes a game, and could he make my kind of clip? I don't know. I don't think he's given the chance, but I think I wouldn't put it past him. In terms of his highs, I mean, I think he had a nice, you know, couple runs. Like I was saying, I think the bubble has got to be his high. He had a nice little run there for the Pacers when just providing a lot of, I would say, positive minutes, right? I mean, you go back to that, you know, Philly game, that first game out of the bubble, he was a plus 20, plus minus. Doesn't mean much, but he was really, I thought, solid in that game. I think he had 4 points. And then, you know, in some of the ending bubble games, he had like 9 and 10 points. In that first playoff game, he had 10 points. They got kind of blown out in that game by the end of it, but I thought he was pretty decent in that. He's not a shooter, which is an issue, and he isn't quite good enough to, like, tall enough or whatever to be a center on the defensive end. And that's where his limitations are, right? He's only 6'7", but he doesn't really have, like, he has the body of more a power forward than a small forward. But, and I mean, I think even, you know, if we go back to his kind of what his best was, you might be even saying in the preseason when he hit that, you know, had that really good game against the Kings in India where I think he had, like, 4 or 5 threes. They don't really have a box score from that on Basketball Reference, but I remember that specifically, him hitting a couple threes and nobody expecting it and whatnot. But I mean, like I said, from his standpoint, he had an A-plus season because he's going to probably remain in the NBA next year on a roster, and that's kind of his goal, is just keep staying on roster year after year and maybe have a chance to play some minutes if a guy gets hurt. Pacer-wise, I think they would say he exceeded what they thought they'd get from him, but like, he didn't do enough to me like he's a first sure comeback on this roster, right? I mean, if the Pacers don't bring him back, I won't be disappointed. If they brought him back, I also would be happy. Like, it's kind of this middle ground where it's like, sure, I can see it. And so maybe that's a good place to be in for him, because it means he'll probably get a shot to come back. Also, we'll probably get a shot to play somewhere else. But, you know, I can't say he like blew it away. And it's hard with players of his level, right? Because I'm judging him on a scale, right? I mean, obviously he's nowhere near like a, you know, expectation levels of somebody like Miles Turner or even a TJ Warren expectations for last season that they needed to meet, right? He's low expectations, like super low expectations in Jakar is, and so he met those expectations, and that's all you can ask from a guy like that. And I'd be sure to see kind of what happens going forward with him. And so I've got kind of, I would say I have two lingering questions on him. Let's answer those after this quick break. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Built Go. Built Go is this wonderful energy gel that helps you break through that mental or physical wall every day. They have this easy 1.5 ounce package you can take anywhere with you, right? You can put it in your briefcase, in your backpack, in your golf bag, or even your back pocket. It is the best workout gel on the market. Built Go comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein that's fast absorbing into your system and easy on your stomach. They're full of B3, honey, and a little kick of caffeine, which I find you definitely need for that before that workout or before that day. You don't need a ton of caffeine, but a little kick gets you going, and Built Go can keep you going strong. And right now, if you visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off your next order at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. So my first lingering question with Jakarr Sampson is, can he get any better from the three-point line? And I think that's a question a lot of players I've had in this whole thing. You know, that's a huge part of the NBA, not being able to shoot a three. But I felt there at some there were points where he showed some flashes of being able to be a like jump shooter. Like he just had a, like a not ugly form, let's put it that way, right? He's not TJ McConnell here shooting these ugly-looking three-point shots. And I think that's Jakarr's kind of key. Like if you put him on a roster, right, the Pacers play this old-school, you know, Jakarr's taking like 15-footers from the corner. The old Jermaine O'Neal shot to me would look like, right? It's baseline 15-footers, basically. If you put him in a team like the Rockets, like the Bucks, even the Warriors, you just stuck him in the three-point line and said, you know, you're going to be our high-energy guy at times on defense, right? You're going to because he can guard threes and fours. He's got enough ability to, right? He's not going to be your best, but he can guard bench threes and fours. But, you know, if we skin the corner and get you the ball one time per game, two times per game, can you make that three-point shot? And I think he can. I mean, I think that's something that he will, you know, is good enough at, right? I don't think he's going to blow you away and be 40% from three or whatever. But I think, you know, 30 to 35, just give him a shot, right? I like to see him get a shot at shooting a three-point shot. In terms of his play and kind of building on that three-point shot is offensively, you know, what is hit? You know, I'm interested to see, you know, where he plays next, how they find him a shot or two, right? If he's going to play any minutes, right? So a lot of players you don't like build offensive designs for, right? I mean, especially if they're your 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th guy, right? But what you do occasionally if they play is you want to give them one shot, right? You want to give them a play where they can at least, you know, make a move, right? Jakarr's kind of thing had been, he'd been sort of the cleanup guy for the Pacers, where he would come around, get a little rebound, tip it back in, get a little pass off here or there and lay it in or whatnot, or, you know, that kind of player, right? I'm interested to see, like, if you, you know, drew one play for him, what it would be, and could they, you know, and I think personally it's some kind of three-point shot, right? Put him in the corner, see if he can make a three-point shot a good enough clip. Stay on the court, and then, you know, let him clean up stuff at times. I don't think he's ever going to break through into, like, a starter for sure, maybe not a rotation player, but I'm interested to see that if you, like, give him the opportunity to take shots, not a ton, but a few, could he maybe crack your 9th, 10th guy? Like, I'm thinking with the Warriors, Festus Ezeli, I think that's right? He used to be in, Jakarr isn't quite, you know, as big as that guy was, but Festus was a very much, like, a up-and-down three-point shooter when the Warriors had their 15-16-17 run. And he could kind of score at times around the rim. He just, like, had a lot of, like, you know, he had athletic and this big dude and kind of, like, a power forward body. And I think Jakarr has some similarities to him. Obviously, he's not as good as Ezeli was at his peak. But, like, could Jakarr be that kind of player for a decent team that's, you know, built around three-point shooting? You know, you name them Lakers, Clippers, Warriors, Rockets, right? I mean, I think those teams all might look at him because he certainly proved that he can play some minutes. I guess that's kind of what leads me to my second question is, does he want to return to the Pacers, and where does he want to play? Right, I think he'll have a decent amount of suitors. I guess I don't because he's gonna take a minimum deal. Right, he's, no matter where he goes, he's not getting a more than a 1 year minimum contract. Right, I don't think he gets a 2 year deal. That might be what the Pacers do to keep him, is use that sort of restricted bird rights, or whatever. I think it's non bird rights or whatever. Is it keep him and give him maybe 2 for 4 and like that? But I doubt they would do that. It seems kind of stupid in my opinion, frankly. But, like, will he have some suitors from some better teams, right? And does he want to go play for a better team or in a better city, right? I mean, in better city, I mean, like, a warmer location, right? Does he want to be in a city that's L.A., Miami? And it's not, I mean, I'm from Indianapolis, so let me clarify. I love Indy, and I think it's a great city. But, you know, NBA players tend to, you know, want to be in one of the major markets. Does he want to go there to play? And I think more players want to play for a championship, right? Is there a championship-level team that wants him? And that might be worth it for him, right? The Pacers are probably not quite there. But, you know, he has some familiarity with the roster, with the front office. Coach changes, that'll be interesting, but I'm interested to see what happens with that. Those are kind of my two things for him. I want to see if he can develop a three-point shot, and I want to see what suitors there are from out there. All right, so I know I was pretty quick. Let's take one other break, and then I'm going to give you guys my Drew Holiday trade. So I don't know if I've done this on a podcast before. I'm sure I might have. We've done a ton of Drew Holiday trades throughout the summer and whatnot, even going back to really last trade deadline, right? The Pacers, that's kind of the player I think would make perfect sense for the Pacers. And so they're kind of one of two ways for Drew trades right now. There is the idea that you're going to lose Oladipo, so you need somebody to replace him. So you build a package around Oladipo, and that's pretty easy, right? Oladipo, maybe, you know, talking like you can basically throw in another guy. So, like, I don't know if I do Oladipo, Aaron Holiday for Drew Holiday. That seemed like a little bit much, to be honest. But maybe that's what he gets it. Or maybe it's Oladipo, Leaf, and a first. That's more kind of my cup of tea. But that's one built around trade. And that gets you there cap-wise and whatnot. And that'd make a lot of sense. Kind of basically sending out a player to bring in a player. Now, I don't know if the Pelicans make that trade. I'm not sure they want Oladipo. I'm not sure. They're kind of just replacing a similar problem with a new problem, right? So it's like, you're going to lose Drew maybe in a year. Unhappy, you bring in a guy who's going to leave anyways in a year. So do you want that? Especially when you're not competing for a championship, unless you can sign Oladipo. And you would get his bird rights in a trade. So that's a big up, right? You could probably sign him, but also that's a lot of money, right? So basically what you're doing is you're going to have to pay Oladipo. Let's say you want to keep him $30 million, let's say, if he's good enough to earn it. Maybe even 35 if he's good enough to earn it. And I'm not sure they want to between Brandon Ingram's contract and Zion in a couple of years. And so, you know, if I'm the Pelicans, I am looking to trade Drew for something that I can use as to kind of timeline with Zion, but I'm not sure the Vic. I think Vic's too much of a risk, right? If Vic was a for sure super sure you could re-sign, no brainer, I think, because Drew and him, I think, are, you know, I think Drew's at its peak, Drew is one of the best 30 to 35 players and only best 20, but you trade the fact that there's an extra year of Drew Holiday's contract is a player option, so possibly, but what you basically do in an Oladipo Holiday trade is just give both guys a new place to go where they're maybe more happy. And maybe that's what makes the most sense. That might do it. The other trade, obviously, is building around one of the centers, probably Turner, right? So you can build a pretty easy trade around Turner, Leaf, and Aaron Holiday, and probably a first. You know, I don't know if Drew Holiday deserves four assets, especially if he's not going to pick up that second year, right? So that's the key thing right here. If you know you're getting Drew Holiday for 2 years, then you make a, you know, you give up more assets, right? For just 1 year, it's not a ton, right? But if you have for 2 years and then you can re-sign him possibly with bird rights, then you're thinking, yeah, we can make, you know, we can give him, you know, three or four assets, right? Three. I think the top is three, right? You throw in T.J. Leaf a salary filler. He's not an asset, but he's a salary filler to get to that 24, 25 number. But, you know, I think Turner, Aaron Holiday, and a first is three assets for a guy. If he's there for 2 years, really fits, right? I think the Pacers would really change the dynamics, right? I don't know if it makes them quite a championship-level team, but I think having three guards built around Sabonis with Warren at the four does make things better for this team and does improve their odds of being one of the top three teams, right? All of a sudden now, I think they have enough offense and enough defense to compete with a team like Miami in some ways, right? Because even just doing off the top of my head, right, you're thinking you can match up Sabonis with Bam, you can match Warren with Butler, you can match Oladipo with Tyler Hero, you can match Brogdon with Andre Iguodala, and then you can match Drew Holiday with Goran Dragic, right? That's kind of the five of those teams. And then there's other guys you can piece in, right? Drake Crowder's over there too or whatnot, but like that feels like it's doable, right? And then you also have, can you match up well enough against Giannis and them? And you might be able to then. I mean, they're going to play bigger, right? But like then you have four, you know, I would say you have three solid perimeter defenders in Oladipo, in Brogdon, and in Holiday. And I think Warren's getting better. And I think Sabonis as a pure center would be a much better defender than he has been in the past. So I think those are the two kind of options I would go on. I'd be skeptical of giving up a ton of assets, especially giving up. Like, I think I'd be comfortable with, like, maybe you do, like, a McDermott and a Turner for that move because you're banking on getting Lamb back to replace him, or maybe you throw Lamb in the trade. But giving up Aaron Holiday is risky because he's an asset, right? And give up a first for sure, another asset. But if you only get Holiday for 1 year, I don't know if you make that kind of move. But Holiday will have some suitors, right? There are a lot of teams that, you know, are one move away, they think, between the Nets are probably thinking that. Who else is going to have the ability? I don't know. Clippers can really make a trade, but they might be able to pull something off. Golden State really can't. They need a third team involved. Denver is the other one. They're a big one. So, I mean, the Nets and Denver are probably the front runners, in my opinion. I'm probably blanking on another team, but it seems like he will probably go somewhere else. If I had to put money on it, I'd put on Denver right now. But interesting. I think it's interesting to see what happens. I think getting Drew would make a lot of sense for the Pacers in terms of just kind of modernizing their offense in a way. But I could see them not wanting to give up as much assets for an unknown thing, right? I would be interested in looking at, though, the Oladipo for Holiday trade. Just if both are unhappy, both have 1 year left, both, you know, a lot of teams won't give up a ton for a one-year guy, let's say, and you just say, let's just flip them and change the scenes, right? You get Oladipo and Leaf, get you that, or Oladipo, Leaf in a second. Probably got to throw an asset to counter out Leaf's terrible contract. That gets you there, right? And maybe that's worth it for 1 year to see if both guys like it better, and then you can see if both of them can re-sign him. Just a thought. I don't know what will happen. We'll see. But that's something to follow as we go forward. The other thing to follow, obviously, is the NBA news on the CBA and the start date. I said this earlier in the podcast, but December 22nd seems like the start date, so we'll see what happens with that. And we'll see how free agency and the drafts. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. It's going to be a crazy next 6 to 8 weeks, I think, as we head from Thanksgiving to Christmas to the season starting. So I'm excited. I hope you guys are. As always, we'll have everything covered for you here on the Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll bring you the show hopefully 5 days a week, probably going forward for a while right now as we have all this content going on. So as always, you can follow us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow my co-host Tony at TEastNBA. You can follow me at FriedmanAdam5. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.